Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio. Special Operations Military News, and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Hey, what's going on? This is Rad, your host for Soft Rep Radio, bringing you another awesome episode today. My guest joining me is author John Wynn Miller, okay, and that's W-I-N. I want to point that out. John Wynn Miller, and he has written the book, the novel, the World War II epic that's out right now that you can go and purchase on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and it's called The Hunt for the Peggy Sea. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here. Happy to be anywhere, actually, but happy to be here.
Well, to our listeners, you're an author. You're an investigative journalist. You have background in research and studying. What is it that made you just want to write and become an author? Is this your first endeavor?
It is my first novel. I became a journalist more than 30 years ago, let's say, because I wanted to write the great American novel. Unfortunately, I didn't know how to write, and I had nothing to write about. I'd had no exciting experiences, so I became a journalist, ended up being an investigative reporter, was a Pulitzer finalist. Then I was a foreign correspondent based in Italy for almost 5 years for the AP and the Wall Street Journal, covered politics. And when I retired the first time, i.e. took a buyout because the newspaper industry was collapsing, I was determined that I was going to learn how to write screenplays. And the idea had actually occurred to me years before. This true story, it's strange. I had been watching a movie, a really bad movie that I can't remember the name. with my daughter, Allison. And the whole time I kept saying, I know I can write a better script than this. I just know it. Right. And that night I had a dream. And when I woke up, I knew the first scene and I knew the last scene of the screenplay. And I knew the name of the ship, the Peggy Sea. Where that came from, I have no idea. And so years later, when I decided to write a screenplay, I read books and watched videos and went to conferences and finally wrote the script and actually got some interest in Hollywood. Not great. Obviously, I didn't sell it. And then when COVID hit, I decided, you know, it's about time that I write that novel. I wanted to start writing 40 years ago or so. I just started writing. Again, I took some online courses. I read books. I had the advantage that by this point, I know how to write. I can write clearly. Uh-huh. Doing screenplays taught me how to create dramatic scenes and how to build character arcs. So I felt kind of ready, and I surprised myself and finished it in about 7 months, and then got a publisher, Bancroft Press, which I sent out 50 query letters.
That's good.
Yeah. It was huge. And then the publishing process, it takes 18 months to get a book out. So I sold this 18 months ago, and now it's just appearing on your bookshelves. Anyway, so that's the reason why I wanted to write. I'd always wanted to do it, and I decided, look, I may as well just do it. So
now you need to go have another dream tonight and decide on your next path tomorrow morning.
Believe it or not, I enjoyed writing the book so much, that, and I loved the characters so much that I immediately turned around and started writing the sequel. Because my publisher said, you need to keep writing. So I did. And I finished the sequel in a few months ago. And now I'm into the third volume, which may or may not be the last volume in this series, but using a lot of the same characters all during World War II, different phases. So it's been fun.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great backdrop, World War II, you know, and U-boats and studying, you know, the movements that you had researched about U-boats, right? You were studying logs and just reading everything and just soaking it all up, right?
Yeah, that's the disadvantage I had. They always say, write what you know. Well, I know nothing about U-boats. I've never been on one. I know nothing about tramp steamers. Never been on one.
Right.
I'm not Jewish, although I have Ashkenazi blood and Jewish relatives. So I had to do a ton of research because I wanted what I wrote to be historically accurate and to get the technology accurately. So when you finish my book, you will pretty much know what it's like to live on a U-boat or a tramp steamer. You'll know how to drive a U-boat, which took me forever to figure out. And there are some really cool websites that are devoted to data on U-boats. There's one where I was able to, as you mentioned, I was able to read the logs of every U-boat captain during the war. And I used that because I wanted to know what the phases of the moon were, each stage of my chase. The book is a World War II thriller, but it's about an American smuggler, kind of a dark past, who rescues a Jewish family from Amsterdam and sneaks them out on his rusty cargo ship, which really upsets his crew of misfits because they didn't know he was going to do something so dangerous, and ends up sparking a chase, almost 3,000-mile chase by a U-boat captain bent on revenge. So I had to research each piece of that in significant detail. So I didn't want to just say, right, you know, they had a submachine gun. What kind of submachine gun? Well, it's an MP40. How many rounds?
40. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say MP40, MP44. You didn't even have that. Like, were they using, you know, the Luger? What was, or, you know?
Well, that's one thing I had to be careful about, because if I were just to go on what the movies show or what you think, you would think they all had Lugers. Well, the Navy actually used Mausers. They used the M1934 pistol. So,
which is used by Han Solo in Star Wars.
That's right.
It is. I just want to point that out. Okay, so the Mauser you're talking about, for my listener, if you are like, what does that gun look like, right? Yeah. If you're listening, if you can think of Star Wars and Han Solo has it and it shoots a laser, but they just flared out the end with a new muzzle brake, right? And put a scope on it. That's right.
Well,
I mean, really.
The guns play a significant role because different people had different kinds of guns. So, for instance, the captain of my ship, Jake Rogers, he has an old Colt M1911, which was sort of a blue steel, walnut checkered handle, World War One pistol that he kept locked up in his cabin in case he needed it to deal with his crew, which he frequently did. But it was that kind of detail that I wanted people like you to read and say, oh, right, I know what that is. That's the right weapon.
Yes.
Or that's the type of uniform he would wear. That's what the insignias were on submarines. For instance, U-boats generally did not have, you know, like U-295 on them because they didn't want the Allies to be able to track them. So most of them had emblems on them, like a leaping frog or jumping dolphin or snorting bull. Wow. And so I had to be careful with how I describe U-boats that I didn't put something on them that typically wasn't there. So again, that was a lot of fun. And some of these websites, there's one called U-boat.net that I can look at the history of every single U-boat, every captain that was on it, ships that they sank, when and where, a lot of articles about the technology aboard U-boats, not so much on tramp steamers. It was a little harder for me to research them because they weren't quite as romantic, I guess, as U-boat captains who many of them wrote memoirs. Not many merchant ship captains wrote memoirs. So
they are just the captain. Like, hey, I've already. Stardate 376, you know, it's like, get going.
And so I get into a lot of how tough it was to sail. My story starts in Amsterdam and they end up going through the English Channel, the Strait of Gibraltar, through the Mediterranean and almost to Palestine. I'll just put it that way.
Which is why it's a 3,000-mile chase, which you kind of allude to. And then you have all these days that go along with 3,000 miles.
Yeah.
Right? All these different scenarios that have to take place over 3,000 miles of traversing the ocean with different types of, you know, currents. And again, moon cycles. Like, you know, is the moon always shining on the water or is it completely pitch black out? You know, it's like,
Well, and I had to make sure. When I started, can't remember if it was a full moon or not the first night. And so I had to go through the phases of the moon as the trip went along, you know, and go to, you know, half moon, gibbous, waning moon. But I had to make sure that those were accurate as I went along. And I also had to understand the ocean currents. For instance, again, a submarine, a U-boat, you know, they just don't sink and drive along. They've got two guys, they're manning either electronic buttons or wheels, the helmsman trying to, or the planesmen who are trying to keep the boat level, because if the water temperature will impact them, the salinity of the water impacts them. So they're constantly trying to keep the boat trim.
Their whole buoyancy is like they're trying to stay afloat instead of sinking this heavy machine to the bottom of the ocean. They run, what kind of engine was it? Was it a diesel engine that they used?
Well, they actually,
they were using diesel.
Two engines. They had an AEG, two diesel engines. And then when they were submerged, the diesels had to have oxygen. Mm-hmm. When they were submerged, they ran electric motors, which was cool, but they didn't last that long. You know, the charges, the whole bottom of the U-boat was lined with batteries, which were charged by the diesel engine when they were on the surface. Then when they went under, they lost their charge after maybe a day or so. So it also impacted the speed of the U-boat. Traditionally, you know, again, if you look in the movies, you'll see the U-boat captain at the periscope doing this, and then they're shooting. But in most cases, the U-boat captains preferred to be on the surface and attacking either with their torpedoes or with, they had an 8.8 centimeter gun, I would call it a cannon, but on the deck mm-hmm. that they would use to attack. And on the surface, they could do 17 knots. And underneath and beneath, they could barely do 7 knots. So a typical convoy was moving at maybe 10 knots. And so they couldn't keep up mm-hmm. with the convoys if they were underwater. And they would run out of oxygen pretty quickly, or they would run out of electricity to power them. So they
had their battery supply.
Yeah. It was
so they'd have to be forced to resurface to run their diesel engines so that they could breathe,
right?
So they could get going again. And honestly, it seems like what you're explaining is that the captain, if it was me, would be like, all right, let's just stay, you know, military crest in the water, you know, just right up above where, you know, if we have to get out, we can get out, but we can also engage with our weaponry against other ships or anything on the shore.
They're low slung, except for the conning tower, which would stick up. And I described the conning towers looking like, from the front, it looks like a rook in chess. And from the side, it actually looks like a boot because there's a back, not a patio, but a platform that...
like a deck area.
Yeah, a deck area on the back. So they would prefer to be up above the water level because they could see better. The periscopes, there were actually two periscopes, something else I learned, on U-boats and on most submarines. And what the periscope you see most often on TV or in movies down in the control room, again, with the captain doing this, or the first officer, mm-hmm. first watch officer, that is the observation periscope. It's used mainly to look for planes and scout out for ships. It can be used for firing, but typically the shooting or the firing, it takes place in the conning tower where the captain, the number one, who's the boatswain, and then the helmsman are in there on a periscope that does not go up and down. Again, like you see in the movie, it goes around, and the captain is sitting like on a bicycle seat holding the handles, and he's got pedals that he'll push to turn left or right. He can't go up or down. It is where it is.
It's already static at that point, so it's going to stay there.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
So even when they dive, it's still static like that?
They can raise the end, but the handles don't go up and down.
Inside like of
it. Yeah. Yeah. That's, I guess that's a clear.
So you have to maneuver around that on the ship, right? So, I mean, like if you're the captain or you're driving it in the front and you've got to get back to wherever, you got to go around this hanging down piece in a cramped area and try to maneuver around everything. And
yeah, it's
it's got to be men with like hardened souls to go inside of a submarine and become a submariner in any military. Okay. Whatever the fact is that these guys are putting themselves in these, could be water coffins.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Seriously. The metal coffins are, and for U-boaters, the survival rate was the lowest of all military branches. It's like 2/3 to 3/4 of everybody who served in on U-boats died. So it was really hard service, but to compensate for that, the commander of all U-boats was Vice Admiral Carl Dunitz, who made sure that all U-boat officers and men were paid almost twice what other branches were paid. And when they returned from a mission, they would usually get several weeks off. And there was a special train that would take them back to Berlin or to some of the resorts that were reserved just for U-boat personnel as sort of a reward for the horrible conditions that they've lived in and the danger that they had. So even on board the ship or boat, they had the best food available. They ate very well, although fresh food only lasted for about 2 weeks. So they had a lot of canned food, a lot of meats, the dried meats. Mm-hmm. But they ate much better than the average soldier. They made more money. They were more likely to die than the other soldiers. So,
right.
And it's just unbelievably claustrophobic to think about. You know, you're stuck in this tube where there's barely enough room to stand up, and it's jam packed at the beginning of a mission. They put food, cans of food or vegetables or anywhere they can. In fact, there's 2 heads on a submarine, 2 bathrooms. And at the beginning of the mission, one of the heads is completely full of cans. So you can't use it. So you got 45 men who are going to have to use 1 toilet. And if it's below the surface, too deep, where the water pressure won't allow you to flush the toilet.
Oh my gosh.
They have to use buckets. And the buckets are traditionally were kept around in the diesel engine room. Now, and you know, you got a corridor through the middle that may be 3 feet wide. So it's very difficult.
What?
Yeah. And have hanging above them, they'll have hams and sausages and this dark bread. It looks like a cave, and they'll also have chains in the forward torpedo room, which is where most of the enlisted men would sleep. and they were hot bunked, meant, you know, they had to share bunks. So, but they would have these chains that were used for moving torpedoes and things like that, that made it look like stalactites and stalagmites. So you really felt like you were in a cave. So,
oh yeah. Just like you were just part of the whole machine. You're just a cog in its wheel. You're just like, you know, as you're the human element to keeping it going. And that's simply put, you know. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, you know, like, and you've all got
what would they, you know, that I would rather stay on the surface.
Well, even that could be dangerous, because when they did come up on the surface, traditionally, typically, the captain, the first watch officer, and four other watchmen would come up, and the watchmen would have to station themselves at noon, 12, 3, 6, and 9 with the binoculars and not move. You know, they couldn't, if something blew up behind them, if they turned around and looked, they were subject to court martial. So they set up there. Now, it sounds like fun. Okay, I'm in the clear air. But when you have 30 and 40 foot waves coming at you, the ice cold North Atlantic, you know, you've got clothes on that are never dry. And they're supposed to be waterproof. They're leather or oilskin. And they're not, you know, if you get hammered by waves like that, they don't stay dry very long. And so you're there, you're fighting that and the cold. You're up there for 2 to 4 hours. And there was one case that I mentioned in the novel where it was clear weather, but there were really rough seas and maybe, you know, 30, 40 foot waves, big waves. And the watch crew went up onto the conning tower and it was so clear they were afraid to put on their safety straps. And normally they would have this leather strap that they would strap to the conning tower, but they didn't do it. So this convergence of unfortunate circumstances happened where the U-boat was heading in a following sea, meaning that they were going in the direction of the sea. They came to a huge wave, and they were going up the wave. And before they got crest, another 40-foot wave came over behind them, took all four of the watch crew, and they were never seen again. So even if they, and the reason they didn't put their,
so the surface,
yeah. So the reason they didn't,
so the extra pay though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, and there was this real esprit de corps among U-boaters. I mean, when you're in that much danger all the time, you really think you're something special. And I kind of make a little fun of that, where my hero, Captain Rogers, is a real cynic. He, rumor has it that he fled America as a young man because he killed somebody. And he's tough, he's gruff, he's, you're never sure when his temper is going to explode. But, so it's, and I've completely lost where I was going with that story, but,
Oh, no, no, that's okay, because the wave came up, and then it crashed down on him, and then I was like, that's extra pay, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
And then the captain.
Well, what I was going to mention is that the reason they didn't have their safety belts on is that they were afraid that the planes, because it was so clear, that they could be attacked by British walruses or Southerlands, and wouldn't be able to get back into the ship on time. So it's just a stupid mistake. But the esprit de corps.
Oh yeah. And now in the book, you rescue a Jewish family from Amsterdam, or the characters are involved in rescue during the World War II, war. Now, where did that, you know, I know where it came from because that happened in the war all the time, but these characters that you picked out, one of them's name is Miriam, right?
Yes. Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that adventure.
So, Captain Rogers is a smuggler, basically, and he goes from port to port, transporting things that are legal and maybe less than legal. And this takes place right before America enters the war, and he's on an American flag ship. Mm. So they're neutral. So they can go to a lot of the ports in theory and not get sunk. So when Rogers in the Peggy C dock in Amsterdam, because he's bringing something for a Nazi official that they had wanted transported, not a weapon, just some prize. Anyway, he, the way tramp steamers work is the captain gets there. Normally there's an agent that helps them find more, stores or things to ship. Well, his agent is gone. So he has to go looking for cargo, and he goes to, one of the men he has worked with before, and he gives him and said, I will pay you more than you can earn in 5 lifetimes to transport this pack, this box,
this cargo.
Yeah. And then once they get it on the ship, he does it for money. And then they discover that they're a family of Jews hidden in the box, and including Miriam, who's the oldest daughter of the family. And the crew gets really upset because, you know, they point out, you know, if you smuggle booze or cigarettes, the Germans don't care. They'll just take their taste. Mm-hmm. But if you're smuggling Jews, they will kill you. And unfortunately, they get stopped by a U-boat for inspection, which was not unusual. And they'd hidden the Jews away in a secret compartment, which the German boarding party quickly finds. And so Rogers has to use his brains, and he tricks the U-boat to go in a bad place so they can't chase him. And so that's where the chase begins. So then he's got this family of Jews that he gradually becomes really enchanted with because of the warm family relationship, something he's never had.
Sure.
Came from a broken family. You know, the rituals are so comforting in the joy and the even in terrible situations. And Miriam, like him, is a reads voraciously. And that's what makes this captain, Rogers, a little unusual, is that he reads voraciously. And they have turned out that they've read a lot of the same books, like Ivanhoe or other adventure books. And that right. plays a key role later on because of that shared knowledge. Anyway, they gradually fall in love, and she
go get the book.
Yeah, no, I can't tell too much.
Yeah, no.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
I don't want you to tell everything about it. I just know that, you know, there's a fondness for Miriam. And, you know, even like what you just mentioned, it's World War II. They're being persecuted for just being alive on the planet Earth for who they are. No rhyme or reason to it. And he still sees family love between them in dire needs of being boarded by the U-boats. And, like, you know, they're still trying to keep a positive outlook on life. But, you know, you're being chased and hunted just because of.
And he, he, like most Americans, had no idea how bad it was for the Jews in Amsterdam or anywhere in Nazi-occupied Europe. And what he saw when he was there appalled him. But then she, one night, she starts talking to him about what it was like to live in Amsterdam under the Nazis, because, it, you know, it's almost like the story of the apocryphal story, probably, of the boiling frog. Now, you put a frog in water and slowly turn the heat up, and he won't jump out until he's boiled. Well, that's what the Nazis did. It was so insidious. At first, they didn't do anything other than, well, you have to, everybody has to register, and you have to tell us your religion. Okay, and then you have to give us your address. Then, now you're going to have to carry a special passport with J for Jew on it. Oh, by the way, now you can't go to any public parks, and you're fired from any job you had in government. So it gradually gets worse and worse. And then just even more insidious is they force the Jews to appoint a Jewish council that is going to enforce all of their rules. Now, those poor guys who were on that council, rabbis and, you know, prominent citizens, they believe that if we can just control the protests and make sure that no one is breaking the law, that it can't get any worse. Well, of course, it gets worse, and it gets worse and worse. And Miriam's mantra is, why don't we ever fight back? And the answer was, because it'll only get worse. And there's a scene where there's this great irony of the Netherlands. It, you know, very liberal country, but Jews were protected and then abandoned. So early in the war, in February 1941, the entire country went on strike against the Nazis for their treatment of Jews. For 3 days, the whole country, most of the country, was shut down till the Germans suppressed the protest with guns and grenades. And they ended up arresting a bunch of people and sending them off to concentration camps. So there were no more major protests. But that was one side of the Dutch. You know, they're the only country that had a nationwide protest about the Nazis' treatment of Jews. And then they also became the country that had the highest percentage of Jews who were killed. And so it's this irony. And Miriam goes into a lot of that. So you get to see just how terrible it is. And it also adds tension to the escape, because you know what is going to happen to them. And they can't just drop off in England, for instance, because they won't accept them. America won't accept them. Cuba won't accept them. France, you know, all the countries that surround Holland were Nazi occupied or Nazi sympathizers. the only country in Europe that actually did something about it was Denmark. And again, one of the things that was fun about this book was every time I started doing research, I'd stumble on something and say, what? I had no idea that happened. I never heard of this.
Yeah.
So I was mentioning Denmark. When the Germans took over, they didn't do anything with the Jews at first. Then they passed an ordinance saying that we're going to round them up. The Danish hid every Jew. There were about 8,000 in Denmark, snuck them across the water into neutral Sweden. So fewer than only a few hundred Jews ever were rounded up by the Germans in Denmark. It's remarkable. I mean, it was a little easier because the border, it's a small waterway between Denmark and Sweden. But so there was a lot of fascinating little tidbits of history that I kept running into that were, I think, will make the novel fun for people who really have read a lot about history of World War II. I think you'll be surprised at some of the things. Hopefully you'll be pleased with the accuracy of the technology and the history. So it's been a real labor of love in dread dealing with some of that horror.
Well, there's you have a website, right? Is it is your website John Wynn Miller? Is that how do you, what is the
JohnWynnMiller, John Wynn Miller. It's on my book. You can go to that and you can read more about me. You can read about the book. You can download the first chapter if you want. You can also order it because it's available everywhere you get your books on Amazon, Audible, Barnes and Noble, Walmart, and many local books.
You have it narrated.
Yes.
Did you do your own narration or
no,
did you have someone?
No. Have you heard my accent?
Well, I'm actually just loving it. I have no problem, you know.
I did a lot of drama in high school and had to learn. And I did broadcasting because for AP, when you filed a story, you would also have to do a 1-minute broadcast. You'd record it. And so I had to go through training to learn the difference between saying five and five.
Five and five.
I did not narrate the book. The publisher hired an actor who ironically had graduated from the same college I did, the University of Kentucky, many years ago. And he does a wonderful job because I have so many foreign words and titles in there that he had to learn how to pronounce correctly. Yeah. And it was just dynamite,
right,
the work he put into it. So it's fun to listen to, if I do say so myself.
So you can read the book, you can download your book on Audible and listen to it if you're, on the road or like to listen. And, I think that would be a good Christmas gift, right?
Yeah.
Everybody loves,
Book. And it's not just a war story. It's really, it's this kind of lovely love story that's wrapped into an action adventure. I mean, there's lots of action, but ultimately it's about what they learn about each other, how Rogers, the captain, his character arc, as they would say in movies, is that he goes from the cynic who thinks soldiers are suckers, and that people who talk about honor and duty are just they're fools, and that he talks about Napoleon, what Napoleon said, that it's amazing what people will do for little pieces of colored ribbons. And so he's always making fun of them for wanting to get those colored ribbons. And by the end, he sees that there are things worth fighting for. I liken it to, when I was pitching it as a movie, I would say it's a Casablanca meets Das Boot, because of the love story, the cynical Rick, who by the end does the noble thing. And so it's a book for, I hope for most people would like it. It's an adventure story It's a love story. It's a war story. But it's really about people and love. Which,
right. And just seeing each other for who they are and not having any, you know, like we're just people bleeding the same red blood. I say it on a lot of my episodes, you know, with a lot of my guests. And we all seem to agree that we're all just humans living on this earth together. And, you know,
why can't we just get along?
We should just keep it that way.
Yeah. Well, and even, even I was careful. I didn't want to do caricatures. So even the Nazi, the U-boat captain who kind of goes crazy, a guy named Victor Brower, who's based on a number of real U-boat captains, both good ones and bad ones, and who did smart things and evil things. But he, I tried not to make him a caricature. He really believes in what he's doing. He's doing his duty. He thinks he's doing God's will. And that, you know, he's got to be tough to do tough things. He thinks the Americans and the Allies are hypocrites because they, you know, they complain about U-boats making sneak attacks. And he said, well, they do the same thing, which in fact they did. So, and you learn a lot about his background, about his family. He's a self-made man who had to work his way through. He was a merchant marine and worked his way through law school and then became a U-boat captain through some kind of slimy things. But he's a real person. He's not just evil, although he ends up being pretty evil.
You know, it's crazy that we're talking about this. I have to go back to this time when I was younger and I was with my father and we were in Wisconsin. And he's like, you know, let's go take a look at something while we're visiting my dad. And I was like, all right. We left grandpa's house and he took me over to a submarine. And there was a submarine that's docked in Manitowoc, Wisconsin.
Wow.
And I got to go on. Yeah. And it's an old diesel style. And I don't think it's a U-boat. I think it's U.S.
Yeah.
Right. US. But it's there and it's, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a U.S. boat. And I mean, that's my submarine. I've been on it. You know, I went down into it. And so when you're talking about these 3 foot, you know, ways and how cramped these places are, go on a submarine, go check one out. That's possibly like a museum that you can go walk on and you'll see exactly that. It's claustrophobic.
There is in Chicago, you know? There's a real live U-boat that was captured hull. I think it's U-505 in the museum there, which again, because of COVID, I couldn't go up and go through it. So I watched videos of it and we got a lot of description. But the thing you don't get necessarily when you walk through a museum quality ship is you don't get the smell, you know, the bodies that have been in there for weeks without really, they don't wash because they can't waste the water. They generally don't shave. You've got diesel fuel fumes. You got cooking fumes. You got sometimes the batteries get damaged. And so you've got chlorine gas, which is poisonous in enough acidic level. And you got moldy clothes that never dry. And you're sharing beds or you're sleeping on the floor. And you can't get to the bathroom. You got to use a bucket. So that adds to the smell. So, and it's,
geez,
it's,
talk about quarantine.
And it can be freezing cold in there. They have heaters, but when they submerge and they're being chased, they turn the heaters off so they don't make any noise. So it, you know, there's condensation dripping all over the place. It's freezing cold. No matter how many jackets they put on, they're just shivering underneath the water. And one of the ironies, again, something I learned is that Admiral Dunitz, the head of U-boats, he described it. He said, you know, U-boats really aren't underwater vessels. They're diving vessels. If they were just underwater, they would be like a squid or something that waits in the rocks for the prey to crawl into your mouth. And you can't do that. So they spend most of their time or as much time as possible on the surface. And they dive when they have to, because they become even more vulnerable then. Now, the Allies at the beginning did not have a sonar or something to track them, but they did develop, it's called ASTIC. And if you ask me what it stands for, I couldn't tell you. I know, but I can't remember. And it was a primitive type of sonar. So they could generally locate U-boats, and it became more sophisticated as the war went on. So when you submerge and you're being chased by a bunch of Allied destroyers, you're trying to be deathly silent. They turn everything off. They turn the heaters off. They have a gyro compass that spins around, that they turn that off because they don't want any noise.
No sound.
No sound. They'll put mattresses on the floor and socks on their take their boots off. Only whisper.
Wow.
And in most cases, they just have to stay in their beds or at their battle stations and wait. And as they wait, they can hear the sort of the egg beater motors going around them, getting closer and closer. And then they can hear that pop and then a whoosh and then bubbles and then a click.
Charge.
And then that's when the bombs, or the, they detonate, and they may be close to you. They may not blow you up right away, but they'll, knock out your lights. They'll be stuck in the dark with water shooting everywhere. Again, the terror of all that, I just can't imagine. But my point is, when you said
ASDIC, it's ASDIC,
correct,
right? Real quick.
Yep.
And it says, later known as sonar, was a secret device for locating submerged submarines by using sound waves.
Yeah.
It was named after the Anti-Submarine Detection Investigation Committee.
Yeah.
So that's where it gets its name, those four words. And it consisted of an electronic sound transmitter and receiver, and it was housed in a metal dome beneath the ship's hull. So that's, they're trying to get on to capturing these boats and sonar, one ping down bubble.
Yes. And so they, that's why most U-boats didn't survive. Another sort of ironic thing is that fairly early in the war, because of Ultra, they broke the code for submarines. And they that was helpful. But what really helped them was a strength that the Enigma was the name of the machine that the boats
were waiting to hear it.
And, it's a machine with three or four wheels that generate random letters. And you have a document that on water-soluble pink paper that you can look up. All right, here's today's date. Here's what we start each one of these four or three or four rotaries. That creates 17,000 possible combinations. So they considered it unbreakable.
Hmm.
What they didn't know was that fairly early in the war, the Americans captured, not the Americans, the Brits captured a submarine intact and got the Enigma machine, got a lot of the code books, and it was top secret. No one knew until long after the war was over. But even without that, the strength of the U-boats is that they were coordinated from Dunitz, basically, from the headquarters in Laurent, France, on the Bay of Biscay. But the way they were controlled is that Dunitz insisted that the U-boat captains call in several times a day, and he would send them radio messages several times a day, because the way they operated is they would have a line of U-boats several hundred miles apart, and once one U-boat spotted a convoy, then headquarters would coordinate bringing the wolf pack together to attack that. Very effective.
Convoy.
Unfortunately, what it also does is the Allies had figured that out and had created radio monitoring systems where they could triangulate where the U-boats were. So they were able to move the convoys around away. And So for a part of the war, the Germans were just befuddled. We can't find any. We know they're coming through. So the strength was actually a weakness for them, which was true on a lot of things. And I actually kind of used that principle in the novel. How do you turn an enemy's strength into a weakness? It's just like, you know, jujitsu. And my
like their own ego.
Yeah, exactly. And so my captain, my hero, Captain Rogers, he's a big burly guy, but he uses his brains more than his brawn.
Mm-hmm.
And, the fact that he's read so much, it's, and he's a deep thinker about things, helps him pull off some hopefully believable escapes.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
No, that's I'm looking forward to finishing it and the whole nine yards. So don't even stress that. I'm excited for the success of your book.
Thank you.
I really want to see, you know, people talking about it and just enjoying it and having it on their shelf. Like you have these books on your shelf behind you, you know, something in their core memory. Like, hey, people ask me, hey, Rad, what's a book that really resonates with you? And I have to go back to the Babe Ruth story from seventh grade. I couldn't put it down. I'd walk through the halls. I was flipping the pages. A young kid loved baseball. You know, that's me. And, you know, those are core memories that I feel like impact.
Did you ever read Roger Kahn? He wrote The Boys of Summer. And he wrote a profile of Babe Ruth. And one of my favorite lines of any sports writer was when he said that when Babe Ruth moved, center stage moved with him. You know, and it's just, it was brilliant because he was like the superhero of, you know, the Michael Jordan of his time or the Tiger Woods combined, probably.
Oh, he still is of our time today. It's Babe Ruth.
Yep.
I mean, he's living this legacy even 100 years later, really.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's like, here he is. And we're talking about him because his book, that book, seventh grade, little Rad in seventh grade, just obsessed with baseball. I wanted to go pro.
Oh, so really? Like, oh, that's great.
The teacher's like, everybody's like, you have to pick a book out of the library and read it. And I was like, man, Babe Ruth, done. So
actually, one of the screenplays I wrote involves a one-time pro baseball player who in his first pro game gets beamed in the back of the head. And this based on a true story. Oh. There was one player that got beamed and could never play again because he had benign positional vertigo, which means that out of nowhere, all of a sudden you're spinning and spinning and spinning around. So this player gets involved in being suspected of a murder, and he's trying to get away and prove he's innocent. And every time he gets into a crisis, his vertigo hits. And so,
Right.
Anyway, but that's again,
that I love it. I love it.
And the way he coaches, he's a high school coach. The way he coaches, he has baseball cards and he'll pull them out to illustrate a point with the kids. I forget the name. It's been so long since I've read my own screenplay, but there was one, I think it was a Yankee pitcher that only had one hand. And
Jim Abbott.
Yeah, Jim Abbott. Thank you. Yes. And so.
Yeah, you're welcome.
But one of his players is very, one of his kids, pitchers, is really upset about how bad things are going. And he said, things are great for you. Look at Jim Abbott. You know, you could be him.
Yeah, look at Jim Abbott, dude. One arm. Yeah. Rocks his glove on his fist. Okay. And then switches it and throws the ball. Yeah, I have his rookie card.
Oh, you're kidding.
Let's go. No, I'm not.
Look, again, the funny thing
is, I love baseball.
I know nothing about baseball, but I was doing research because I knew who this character was. And so I had to do all this research on all these different players. I Gene Hodges, the name of the screenplay is The Losing Streak, and it's the story that this guy tells is when Gene Hodges went like 40 straight games without a hit, and including in the World Series, and they would hold masses just for him, praying for him.
Hey, I could play a coach in the movie, no problem. Put me in. I'm ready to play. You know what I'm saying?
Anyway.
You could just say, I've been out of the league for a while, grew my hair out. Yeah. You know, it's like, run the bases, kids.
I just love doing the research and learning things that I knew nothing about and trying to write authoritatively about them. And, you know, write something that you'll learn something while you're being entertained. And that's kind of what I try to do with this book. I mean, it entertained me, but it entertains others.
Well, you're a dream chaser, you know, John, and you went to bed and woke up and said, I can do this, and you've pursued it. And it took you 18 months to go from, you know, this getting signed with an agent to launching it out there. So anybody listening who has the thoughts of becoming a talent and writing and getting your book out there, it's a process, right? And you just have to stay the course for it and keep dreaming it, right? Because that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. That's why John's doing, I'm sure what John's doing is we're chasing what makes us happy, right? Yeah. We're going after those types of, I guess, verifications in life. What am I looking for? I don't know.
Affirmation.
Happy. I'm happy. Yeah. Affirmation. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, exactly. Now, John, I've had you for almost an hour. We've listened to you talk so well about the U-boats and your book. And I hate to wind it down, but I'm going to let you go. And if there's anything that you would like to close with, I'll let you have a minute to say. Go ahead. If there's a website or anything you want to say, go ahead.
Thank you very much. This has been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it. I have my website, johnwynmiller.com, where you can read more about me, about the book. You can read about my lovely daughter, Allison Miller, who's a star on ABC's A Million Little Things. The TV show.
So, oh.
I drop her name all the time.
Shout out.
Well, I joke when I was growing up, I was known as my father's son, and now I'm known as my daughter's father. So anyway, I hope you'll enjoy it. I hope you'll read the book and find it fun and entertaining, educational, and also thought-provoking about what happens when we stop being tolerant and when ideology trumps honor and decency. So I think you'll have a good time if you read it.
Well, I can't end it on a better word than tolerance and decency with one another here. So as we have been on the show, I appreciate that time with you. You've been eloquent in your speaking, and I'm sure on behalf of myself, the Soft Rep family, community, Brandon Webb, everybody that's involved with this whole website, I just want to say thank you so much for being on the show. We'll talk about when it goes to movie next
yes,
time.
Yes.
Okay. Because I'm looking forward to being your coach, whatever you need. Okay. You just let me know, but
great. Wonderful.
All around. I hope you much success. Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, John. And with that said, this is Rad, your host on Soft Rep, saying peace.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.